Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of US soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
Welcome to the Songwriter Connection, the podcast that delves deep into the art and heart of songwriting. Each week, we gather around the dining room table to uncover the stories behind the songs. We invite you to join us on a journey to the creative minds of the songwriters who shape the melodies of our lives. From Nashville, Tennessee, here's your host, Dave Lenihan.
Thank you, Kate. You know, that's brand new. That's a new open for a new goal. We're on mission 1 million by the end of the summer. That's a million streams here of the podcast Songwriter Connection, and we thank you for spreading the word and getting it out there. You know, we talk about doing it for passion, for love, to define your own success, and to keep on writing, right? Yeah? Let me tell you about a payday for me recently. And I'm not talking about my BMI check where I go to Waffle House every time I get one. You know, me and my wife's room for Waffle House. We get the blueberries and everything. I'm talking about the real kind of hits you in the heart thing. So I'm playing at a place called The Local. For the first time ever, I was invited to play The Freak Show with Terry Joe Box, who's a big hit writer, who someday I'm going to convince to come and be around this dining room table and play some of her hits. But anyway, I played there. And after the set, I sit down, and this lady from behind the bar tapped me on the shoulder. She goes, "Do you see that guy in the corner over there? There's a guy with a camo shirt. He really liked your set, and he's kind of shy and doesn't want to come over. But if you get a chance, make your way over and introduce yourself." So I did, and his name was Davis. And I go, "Wow, my favorite aunt always called me Davis. Good to meet you." And we start talking. He was asking me about my song Squirrel Train, which we had some success. By the way, that was my number one country song. So the country was Tasmania, but I'm still counting it, okay? 2 weeks at number one. So we were talking about that. And next to him is a guy with a Chancey Williams t-shirt on. Now, Chancey Williams, if you don't know him, he was a big rodeo star. He started into country music, and he's been doing really good lately. He's been on the Grand Ole Opry a couple of times. Great guy, really big out west, Wyoming in there. And so anyway, he cut one of my songs called Baby, I'm Gone. And it was on his first album when he was with Average Joe Records. And in fact, he did it twice. He did an acoustic version and a band version. So this guy in the Chancey Williams shirt says, "I can't believe you wrote Baby, I'm Gone." And I don't know if you heard me, but I was singing along. I said, "You know that song?" He goes, "I know every Chancey song, man. I love that guy. And I just can't," because I taped a little bit of it and I sent it to Chancey. And I said, "Well, tell him I said, hey." Now, for me, that's a payday. Because that stuff doesn't happen to me. That happens to my friend Billy Lee all the time. Billy wrote the one from Gary Allen. And I'm sure it happens to our guest today. We're very happy to have Tim James with us. Tim, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it.
Thank you for coming up from Murfreesboro. I really appreciate that.
Oh, man, no problem.
Let me tell you a little bit about Tim James. He's got a cut on the new Kenny Chesney album called Born, and it is called One More Sunset. It's a great song. He's got this song that you're going to hear a lot more of this summer with the King, George Strait, and Chris Stapleton, called Honky Tonk Hall of Fame. And he's got another Kenny Chesney cut coming very, very soon. Speaking about Chris Stapleton, they've been writing together for years, and he's got a cut on the new Chris Stapleton record. He wrote the song Either Way. Leanne Womack cut it first, and Chris sang background, and then he ended up putting it on his record as well. He wrote an iconic song called My List from Toby Keith, and we'll talk about that. George Strait, give it all we got tonight. This song that broke records, Lee Bryson, and this is a great song, Love Like Crazy. That was number one for like 5 weeks, and it broke a record at the time for the most, the longest time on the country charts. It was like 50 some weeks, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it broke a record that stood, what, since 1948, was it?
That's it. Yeah.
Isn't it crazy? You got to love that. Love Like Crazy.
That's crazy.
That's crazy. And speaking of that, in addition to that, he's an author. I've been reading your book, which is called Going Crazy, Left Foot, Right Foot, Breathe.
Mm-hmm.
And there seems to be that theme. You got to be crazy to be a songwriter is what I want to ask.
I think that's a rhetorical question. You could probably answer that too.
A little bit?
Yeah, man. I think, you know, in the book is sort of it's a memoir of sorts.
But I love memoirs. Yeah.
Yeah, it definitely also intertwines sort of my favorite songs, songs that inspired each chapter, songs that inspired my life, songs that inspired me to write other songs.
Yeah.
And some of my own songs. But it's really, it was an 8-year process. I started 8 years ago. I just thought to myself, I actually played a show at the Bluebird, and this lady, I was telling my story, which the story is I was born and raised in Murfreesboro, when Murfreesboro had 20,000 people, and having never been on an airplane after getting kicked out of one college and flunking out of MTSU, it's not like MTSU is the Harvard of the South, but I flunked out.
They got a great radio station.
They got a good radio station. So I got on a plane and went to L.A., and I was going to stay 6 months and stayed 12 years, and
wow.
It was fun. You know, I loved it in those days. It was... sunshine and beaches. And, you know, when you're in your 20s, you don't really give a rip about traffic.
No, no.
Now when I go back, and I'm going back in a couple months, I'm like, oh my gosh, get me out of here. The traffic's too much. But I definitely...
we're catching up here in Nashville.
Oh, I'm telling you. Yeah. But the story is, you know, me starting out saying to myself, why do I do this? And how did I get so lucky as to have hits and get to do this? And it covers my personal triumphs and my personal failures. It goes through it all. Divorce, you know, having to be a single dad. It definitely runs the gamut of emotions.
That's great. And from these emotion songs, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. You know, you go from Tennessee boy to L.A., back to Tennessee eventually. And, you know, reading your book, you just take me to that L.A. scene. Playing basketball every day, a couple times games, joining these different pickup games, playing with guys like George Clooney and Woody Harrelson and stuff. What a thrill, huh?
Man, it was super cool. Those guys, in those days, none of those guys were anything. They lived in apartments, and they were all struggling, either comedians or actors or musicians. Yeah. I did not know that. I was in sales. And I eventually was in sales with A.H. Robbins Pharmaceutical Company, even with no degree.
You were selling Robitussin, I remember.
I was selling Robitussin. And I always say I got fired for drinking more than I sold. But I was working a day job, and all of my friends, including the guys you named and other actors and comedians, John Campanera, who's a famous comic, and my buddies were like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, you know, man, I want to pursue music. But I grew up in a blue-collar household, and my parents were like, you know, I don't care what you'd like to do for a hobby. You need a J-O-B.
Mm.
And so I worked a job until some of those guys, I finally said, man, I booked a band. I did this at 33 years old, 34.
Really? That's when you decided to?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I, at probably 36, played my first gig in Reseda, California, at a club called The Crest. And I remember getting on stage and playing, the band kicked off Liza Jane. And I got to the first verse, and I couldn't do it. I had stage fright. I was like, oh, what the heck is going on? But once I got into it and finished the night, I thought, okay, I realize why this is a drug and why when it gets its hooks in you, it's difficult to get them out. So I did that for probably 3 or 4 years and worked on my chops, worked on my singing. And I'm not the Pavarotti of country music by any means, but I don't know that we have any guys in our genre that are the Pavarotti of country music. But I started making trips home, and eventually I found my calling to be writing rather than performing all the time. And I still perform, you know, do songwriter shows. But yeah, I went to see, in those days it was different. I went to see a guy named Charlie Monk, who's since passed away.
Yeah.
And he was a...
Remember Charlie Monk? Yeah, I spent some time with him one time when I was getting done with radio.
Yeah.
Came and he was really gracious, sat down, and we talked about future stuff.
He was a great guy. He, in his heyday, he was running Acuff Rose, and I came back to town and pitched some songs to him.
Wow.
And he just read me the riot act. Absolutely chewed me up and down. But it was the best advice I ever got. His point was, you know, you come in here and you live in L.A. and you come in here and you play me 3 songs. How many songs have you written over the last 6 months? And I was like, those 3. And he said, okay, I've got Fred Knoblauch and Tom Schuyler in the next room, and they're turning in their 60th, and it's June. So what makes you think you can compete with those guys? He said, the point is, if you want to be in film, stay in LA. You want to be on the stage, go to New York. But if you want to write songs, come back to Nashville. So I did, and I came back here, and then I went through a period where I was like, this is not working out the way I planned. I mean, I was painting houses.
I think I saw one point that you said in an interview that if you have a plan B,
it'll happen.
It'll happen, right?
Yeah. And now I'm not sure if I believe that. But at the time, I thought, man, I don't have a plan B. I'm going, full out.
Yeah.
And so I painted houses in the hot Tennessee heat with my cousin, who's a professional house painter, who was kind enough to employ me. Mm-hmm. But he would let me paint like 3 days a week. And then I would write. I would paint Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday and write Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. Wow. And I was very fortunate that I had made some connections. Some people were like, man, you're talented. You're not there yet. And I'm 30, late 30s.
Wow.
And then I got signed Kelly King, who worked for a company that Don Schlitz owned. It's called Hay Street Music, super small publishing company. Gamer. They signed me.
Yeah.
And I, thought, oh my God, this is the cat's meow. And, they're paying you nothing, but you're still validated. You're like, okay, I'm writing songs for a living. And then at 38 and a half, probably, they closed. Don Schlitz was like, man, I just don't want to do this anymore. And I was like, okay, what the heck now? And now I'm painting pretty much full time, still writing some. And I had become friends with a guy named Chris Dubois, who
another big name.
Yeah, he's a great guy. And he and another guy, Frank Rogers, started a company called Seagale. Okay. And I would kind of hang out with those guys. And one night we were hanging out in the back of a parking lot drinking beer. And one of those guys was like, man, I know somebody that's starting a new company. And I was like, I was out of a deal. So I said, who? I mean, anything beats painting houses. And they said, it's TK Kimbrell and Toby Keith.
Wow.
And the guy's name is Rob Hendon. So I said, okay, cool. So anyway, long story short, got in touch with Rob, played him some songs. And then Rob's, after like the third meeting, called me and, it was the best news I ever got. I mean, at that stage of the game, he called and said, hey man, Toby wants you to get a lawyer. And I thought, did I do something wrong? And he said, no, you need to get an entertainment lawyer. So, we can go over this contract. So yeah, man, they signed me. And then I was there for 3 months. And as fate would have it, Toby came in and said, I'm cutting a new record. And he wanted to cut songs from the catalog. Obviously, he owned them.
Yeah.
And there were two other writers that hadn't signed their paperwork yet because they were kind of going back and forth in legal land. I was broke. So I was like, well,
let's do this.
Let's sign it.
Yeah.
Press hard. You're making three copies. And so, nobody knows except Carbon, you and me. But
by the way, I just want to mention that Toby wrote the foreword to your book, too.
He did. So, yeah. So they heard my list, the song, My List. And great Toby song. Said, man, I'm going to cut that song. Then they cut it.
Monster hit.
Thank you.
Yeah.
He had, and I know I can say this because I knew the guy. He didn't have any intention of putting it out as a single. He was like, man, that's not my jam. What I do is more, I'm not talking about, he's a big boy.
How you like me now?
Yeah, type thing, which he's great at.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. But he didn't really want to cut it and then, put it out. But when 9/11 happened, Scott Borchetta was head of the promotions team at DreamWorks. And he just said, man, if you want to put out something that resonates with people, put that song out. And he did. And it was number one for 5 weeks. And it's since been on 11 million albums because
isn't that crazy?
Toby was selling records. Then Greatest Hits 1, Greatest Hits 2, Greatest Hits 3.
Wow.
So God bless him. He knew when he wrote the foreword to my book, he was sick. He knew it. But I reached out to TK and he said, well, send it to me. And I sent it to him. And he emailed me about 3 days later and said, yeah, man, Toby said, good, let's do it.
Isn't that great?
What a sweet guy.
What a sweet guy. Yeah. So let me say that My List song, I've read that you were like me. You're a list guy. I make a list of what you're going to do today. And it all kind of came out of that, didn't it?
Yeah, for sure.
Tell us about the writing of that song.
Well, I just was, you just said it. I was like, one of my other buddies that lived in LA, who's from Murfreesboro, he always kept this tiny little list in his wallet. And I was always like, dang, man. But I realized that if I didn't write things down, I would forget them. And so I always wrote, you know, my list out. And then I mm-hmm. was making trips back to Nashville to write songs. And I sat down with Rand Bishop one day and I just said, man, you know, my dad had had a heart attack. So yeah. I was like, it hit me that my list is kind of jacked up. Like, you know, I don't really need to think about all this other stuff I need to do. What I really want to do is spend more time with my old man.
Oh, man.
And Rand, who's a super talented writer, just started kind of picking that lick at the top of that song. And then if you think about it, it's a very simple, like, what would you do if you, in those days, I know these kids are listening to it going, what now?
Yeah.
But if you had a paperweight and you had a list, you'd put the paperweight on your list so, you know, it doesn't get blown away or whatever. And Rand started playing that lick and sang that first little bit, and then it was just kind of off and running.
Is that a song you play out? Do you, play that song?
Oh, yeah. I played last Thursday in Palm Coast, Florida, and I can't even sing the first line of that song without people clapping. Like, people, it's 21 years old.
That's payday.
It's payday, yeah. People still get moved by that song.
Can I? One of the things that we do on this podcast is play live music around this dining room table. Can we talk you out of that one?
Yeah, sure.
Can you play it for us?
I can play like bits and pieces of it.
Why not?
I can play the whole. It's up to you.
It's up to you.
I'll play a verse and a chorus.
Sure, let's do that. Okay. Mm-hmm. No need to hear this song.
Brass paperweight, it's my list of things to do today. Go to the bank and the hardware store, put a new lock on the cellar door. I cross them off as I get them done, but when the sun has set, there's still more than a few things left. I haven't got to yet. I ain't going for a walk. Say a little prayer and take a deep breath. Mountain air, put on my glove. Play some catch. It's time I made time for that. Wade the shore and cast the line. A couple long lost friend of mine sit on the porch. Give my girl a kiss. Start living. It's the next thing on my list.
Oh, yeah. I certainly remember playing that on the radio a lot. Great song.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Was that the first big success for you as a songwriter?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I had gotten a cut when I was at Hay Street. Tim Rushlow, who was with Little Texas.
Yeah, Little Texas, yeah.
Was going to cut an independent record, so I got a cut on that. But, you know, it didn't amount to anything. But, yeah, that's, you know, when that's your first single.
Yeah. How do you top that?
Yeah. It's like, man, it's downhill from here. But I was very fortunate in the sense that I'd only been back home here for probably about 3 years. And most people are here 10, 12 years. And I was here 3 years and got that song and it was out. And that's a great, you know, entry into the music and songwriting where people all of a sudden go, oh, you wrote my list.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, I long for something like that. How old were you at the time? Can I ask?
40 years old.
40 years old. So you are an inspiration. You really are.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, people that read that book, if people out there in the listening world would read it, I think it is inspiring. The book is really more about perseverance than it is anything, because in the music business, I say this all the time, Dave, you get a lot more kicks in the cojones than you do pats on the back.
Oh, yeah.
And so,
and you've done sales, so you're used to know.
Yeah,
as I have. Yeah.
Exactly. Like I think that part of it didn't bother me as much. Like when people are like, "Yeah, pass."
Yeah.
I mean, I just sent a song to a friend of mine that's now A&R at Big Loud, and she was like, "Pass."
Pass.
I mean, you just got to get used to it.
Yeah, you do.
But I, regardless of you know what happened personally and professionally, both of which have been filled with ups and downs. I mean, I got two great daughters. I got two.
Oh, that's great.
But I'm divorced. I'm 0 for 2. I have two mulligans. That book covers it all. But ultimately, the book, that's why it's called Going Crazy, Left Foot, Right Foot, Breathe, because at some point in the last 8 years, I had a couple moments. I lost an older brother, got divorced, felt like my career was kind of, you know, I'd had a good run. I'd had 3 number one songs. I'd had 100 and something cuts. I was like, man, a lot of people would die for that. And at one point, I thought between divorce and losing my brother and other things, I just thought, man, I'm losing my freaking mind here. Mm. But what one of my old buddies said to me one time is, man, all you got is left foot, right foot, breathe. And so every morning I try to wake up, regardless of how desperate I've felt or how down I was, and just say, okay, left foot, right foot, breathe, just go and keep going. And I say that to people all the time.
Have you written that yet? Song?
I have not written that idea, but I don't know if that title doesn't left foot, right foot, breathe, but I get the gist of it. And I think there's probably a song in there somewhere, but I just, that book is, it is a true representation of my ups and downs, some of my own making.
You know, and your perseverance, you know, it's which gets me, like you tell a story, I know you're really into sports like me, but a much more gifted athlete, about being cut from a high school team and thinking, I'm going to be the best I can be, and I'm going to show them. And you did. Talk a little bit about that perseverance.
Well,
how you use those negatives to go forward.
It's the same as the music business. Like, you get, that's what I mean, you get kicked around much more than you do, you know, people going, oh, man, we love you. Mm-hmm. And in my case, I got cut from my high school team a week before the season started, more because of my hair and my passing style then, but that's okay. You know, he made the decision he thought was right at the time. But in my case, I'm one of those people, and still I get motivated by no. And, you know, when that happened to me, I said, well, I will do whatever, this is crazy when I think about it, I'll do whatever it takes to prove him wrong. So I literally worked at a factory midnights and stayed out of school and watch the movie Rocky 74 times.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
You know, I'm up running hills at MTSU and lifting weights, trying to put on weight and so forth and so on, eating like heaps of desiccated liver tablets and all this
drinking
stuff.
Drinking the raw eggs.
Yeah, I did it all. Of course, my parents were like, you have lost your mind. But I,
again, am I crazy?
Yeah. I was so determined that then I walked on at a small JUCO, and just the first day, the guy said, yep, I'll keep you. And that's what the book says. Like, you know, it's not that I was, you know, a star player. I wasn't. But my goal was to make the team. And and I made the team.
You did. Yeah.
So that's the same as songwriting. You know how
well,
it is. You
come, I just flash forward a few years when you're sitting down with Charlie Munk and he says, what makes you think? You got three songs. Yeah. What makes you think? You know,
that for me, man, that's motivation. Like it still is. Like I go back through. And we can talk about this some later, but like I dig through old songs. I mean, I've written, people say, how many songs you've written? I don't know, 2,500. Mm. And I dig through them on my computer. I've got a bunch of songs with Stapleton. I dig through them. Wow. I send them out to people. If I got a great song from 10, 15, 4 to 8 years ago, I still dig them up. And at some point, a couple of them, I know they're going to get cut if I don't give up.
Mm.
So that's what I don't do. I persevere.
Never give up.
Personally and professionally, I'm the Jim Valvano of songwriting. I'm like, don't ever give up.
And I'll tell you again, an inspiration. So before we take our break, I want to play another song. I want to get you to play another song and maybe tell us the story behind it.
Which one?
Which one would you like? Well, you know what? If you're giving me the choice, I want to talk about Love Like Crazy because that was a special song even to me. And to a lot of people out there, and a big record-breaking song. So, and you wrote that with Doug Johnson, right?
I did. You know, that is another, that's a great lesson, again, in perseverance. So the way although Mike Reed doesn't know me from Adam's House Cat,
Mike Reed, because of working in Cincinnati for a few years, he played with the Bengals, right?
Yeah, I mean, he's an all-pro defensive end.
Yeah, and a great songwriter.
Yeah, he's just crazy talented. And I remember after I had my list, I went to his house. And so first of all, you know, I'm a sports guy. So I'm sitting there. He's got the Outland Trophy on the wall. But the Outland Trophy was like this big, like 2x2, tiny little thing, like to the best defensive lineman in the country. I'm like, dang, dude.
Are you serious?
That's what they gave you? But he and I talked, and he's so talented. Yeah, but I said to him, I was like, man, what you know, I just had a 5-week number one. I mean,
yeah,
but I still, what's the secret? I don't know the secret to this thing. I'm trying to now get a career that will sustain itself. And I thought he was going to hit me with like a bear claw, like trying to push back a quarterback. But he looked at me and very kind of gave me a gruff look and said, The secret is to show up for work.
Mm.
And so I, again, took that as, okay, if Mike Reed says that, so that's what I did. Two-a-days forever.
Wow.
Love Like Crazy is a great example. My dad and I were super close. My dad passed away about, gosh, I guess it's been like 12 years ago. And I'd had a couple hits. I had my list. I had a top 10 on a guy named Bucky Covington.
Yeah, remember Bucky?
And then I had a top 10 on a band called The Lost Trailers. I had a song that was nominated Hollaback. A song that I wrote with Casey Beathard that was with Trace Atkins called All I Ask For Anymore. That
it's
was
a great song.
Thank you. Oh. That song was nominated for Grammy. Grammy.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't hurting by any means, but I still was determined, like, what do I do? And then when my dad passed away, I was like, man, I don't want to go to work. I just want to, you know, sit at home. And after about a week, I had an appointment with Doug. And Doug and I had written some songs. And I just woke up and we did an NSAI interview about 3 weeks ago for the Tennessean. And I say the same thing. On that particular day, I was very seriously considering canceling. Like, I don't feel like writing and I don't want to do this. And I'm still thinking about my dad and so forth and so on. But I went, what would my dad do? And I said, what my dad would do is go to work and do your best. And so I drove on in and I told Doug, I was like, man, my dad just died and da-da-da-da-da. And I would love to write a song about my parents. And Doug, just same thing, Doug started playing that little... like, man, that's nice. And then, you know, we wrote kind of that verse just again about you think about your parents, like that.
Yeah,
my parents worked hard, but we got to the chorus and it seemed like it was kind of all over the place. And my dad would say simple things because he was eighth grade educated but went on to do very well in life because he was hard-headed. Of course, my mom and my ex-wife would say that's part of my downfall is I'm hard-headed. But again, we just wrote that song kind of talking about our parents, and then we came back to it about a week later. And Doug and I always say we were probably raised by the same people. You know, I mean, he loved his dad too, but we got to the chorus, and I was like, man, we got to make it simple. And my dad would say, you know, stuff like it says, but yeah, it's one of my favorite songs, obviously.
Love this song. Lee Brace had the big hit with this.
They called them crazy when they started out. Said 17's too young to know what love's about. They've been together 58 years now. That's crazy. She brought home 67 bucks a week. Bought a little 2-bedroom house on Maple Street. She blessed him with 6 more miles to feed. That's crazy. Just ask him how he did it. Say, pull up a seat. It'll only take a minute to tell you everything. Be your best friend. Tell the truth. Overuse, I love you. Go to work, do your best, and don't ask my common sense. Never let your praying knees get lazy. Love like crazy. They called him crazy when he quit his job. Said them on computers, boy, they'll never take off. He sold his one-man shop to Microsoft. They paid like crazy. Just ask him how he made it. He'll tell you faith and sweat. In the heart of a faithful one who'll never let him forget. Be your best friend, tell the truth. Don't be used, I love you. Go to work, smile your common sense. Never let your praying knees get lazy and love like crazy. Always treat a woman like a lady. Never got too old to call a baby. Been together 58 years now. Ain't that crazy?
Awesome. The lesson in the song, as we always like to point out, you do the tag on the end. You repeat it, the first line again,
yeah,
before ending the song, which is always a powerful technique. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, I think people used to do that a lot. I don't know if they do it as much anymore.
Every now and then.
Yeah. Good by me. I like it.
And, of course, you wrote that with Doug Johnson, who's a record label exec and a great songwriter, to name one off the top of my head, Three Wooden Crosses, mm-hmm, with Kim Williams. So, yeah. Great. So what an honor. We'll take a little break. Tim James is our guest, and you're listening to The Songwriter Connection. No, go away.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.
You're listening to The Songwriter Connection with Dave Linehan. Find us on Facebook and YouTube at The Songwriter Connection Podcast. And find Dave at thedaveconnection.com. Now back to the show with your host, Dave Linehan.
We're talking with multi-platinum hit writer Tim James today. And Tim, in your book I read, you said that you, which is called, and I want you to get this, believe me, you won't be able to put it down, it's called Going Crazy, Left Foot, Right Foot, Breathe. You say you were born with a giving heart, with a love for performance. So there's a Hammett heart, right? And a wild side.
So, yeah, all three, yeah.
All three, yeah.
Yeah. Like, I definitely, I think, you know, retrospectively, I think, man, I never tapped into my creative side until, I mean, I know that it's the fact,
yeah,
until I was like 30 something. But I enjoy giving. I'm probably still too competitive. Like, I don't even like to lose at golf.
Mm.
But again, I think all of that for me, translates into this, like, you know, man, the old adage, like they used to ask other writers, like, what's the best song you've ever written? They're like, the one I'm going to write tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, so the reason I showed up all those years, and the reason I still show up, not as much as I used to, is I still want to have hit songs. I still want to be a number one writer. And it's not for the accolades. It's not for the money. I tell this friend of mine, we all, as creatives, need some form of validation.
Yeah, that's like, so true.
I mean, even if you're a songwriter and like yourself, and you're getting cuts on, you know, Chancey, or that's still somebody's recording a song you made up in your mind, in your head.
Oh, yeah.
And it's very flattering. But yeah, I'm definitely, I was a ham for sure. I loved performing.
Me too. Yeah.
But I really did not think about it until I was in LA for many years. And like I said, all my friends said, I don't understand why you, I mean, everybody in LA, you know, they do what they love. They're mm-hmm. like, we don't really care what the consequences or the ramifications are. They're like comedians that were friends of mine that lived in an apartment and didn't make a ton of money, but they were like, dude, I'm doing what I love.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be broke. I've been broke and I much more enjoy having some money, but true. I get that mentality.
Yeah.
You know, I still love, yeah, I love performing. I'm doing June 1st at Third and Lindsley, a show with some friends of mine, called Backstage Nashville.
Yeah.
And it's me, Bob DePiro, Ray Bob Stevenson. DePiro. Well, oh, I mean, you know, wow. yeah, it's like, I'm not following Bob DePiro. But
I love Bob's songs. His stories are just as incredible. He's not an Ohio guy like me. So,
yeah, he is. Yeah, he's a great guy. But yeah, I still love performing. I do a couple times a year. I'll do like a full band show, but it's me screaming, you know, old, like, I got to run to keep from hiding, like, which is what I love. And I was more raised on like Southern rock and R&B, not really country. When you grow up 25 miles from Nashville, like, I don't want
to. Oh, yeah. You're going to contribute. Absolutely. You also did some DJing, didn't you?
Well, I did a very little bit. When I went to play basketball in Pulaski, Tennessee, at Martin, it was called Martin College in those days, and this is one of the chapters in the book, the girl I was dating, her dad owned the only club in Pulaski. It was a tiny town, tiny. And there was one club, and he was the DJ. I mean, he was the owner. And then one night, as I explained in the book, he called me and said, hey, I fired the DJ. He was a raging alcoholic. And he was like, I fired the DJ. Can you come spin records? I'm like, dude, I don't even know what the spin cycle on a washer is. Like, no. And he said, oh, come on. So I went up there. He kind of gave me the basics. And it was really, again, hindsight being what it is, it was a turning point in my life, like, because I had never done anything where people would look at you and applaud, and you realize, like I said earlier, it's a drug.
It is a drug. You're absolutely right. Yeah. I did a lot of that, and I used to DJ weddings and parties and clubs and things to supplement my income in the early radio days. And I remember, I've got an interesting story for you. There was a club, I lived in near Akron, Ohio. I went to Kent State University, and there was a pretty rough club that hired me as a disc jockey. Mm-hmm. So I brought a bunch of records. We were spinning them, and they had a bunch of records there as well. And it was kind of a biker bar, okay? And this big mountain of a guy, he was huge. He comes up, and he looks at me at the booth, and he goes, let me look at your records. Okay, and he starts going through. He pulls out a Marshall Tucker record, you know, Can't You See, right? And he goes, play that one. And I went, okay, sure, what song? The whole dang thing. Now, I did. So I did. It was early, so I played the whole record. And I remember the owner telling me, now right behind the booth there is a door. And if a fight ever breaks out, you go through that door, there's always a cop on the corner, just flag him in. He'll come in and break it up. All right, okay. All right, so now I'm in threatened with my life to play this song. Well, I tell you what, that guy became my best buddy. And when fight did finally break out, that was right behind. Behind him. He was protecting me. He was my bud. So yeah, I love those days, and I imagine that was a good taste of being in the limelight for a little bit.
Yeah, it was the first time ever. But I realized, man, and there it says it in my book. This lady came up to me, and she said, you're not great. I mean, this is your first night.
You're not great.
She said, there's something about what you
and,
just
and did. The little I know about you, that just lit you up, didn't it?
Yeah, but she said, you know, what I did see, and she was just some, you know, patron. She just said, when I look back, I go, oh my gosh. But she said, you're a star. Like, you have star quality. Mm. And I was 19 years old, and I was going, I don't even know what the heck that means.
Wow.
But she said to me, I'll never forget it, she said, you need a bigger stage, a bigger platform. Mm. And so when I went to L.A., I didn't go to L.A. to be, people ask me that all the time, did you go to get into acting? I did a play. I did a couple of little bit parts in movies. But I didn't go there for any reason. I went because I knew I had to get out of Murfreesboro just for growing up purposes. Mm-hmm. Like, I would, you know, if you can, in my mind, and everybody's different, if you can go back over to Mom and Pa's and get a free meal. And I mean, I'm dealing with this now. I have a 19-year-old daughter. But, you know, when are you going to ever grow up? And I was working a part-time job and trying to play basketball. And I just went, man, right now I'm at a dead end. And I knew I'm not super smart. I'm not, but I was savvy enough at 19 to go, unless I get out of here, I'll never amount to anything. So going to LA was the best thing I ever did.
Well, you did a lot of growing up there, didn't you?
100%.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the craft of songwriting. Where'd you learn that? When did you realize that this could be what I want to do?
Well, I probably learned it on my own.
Really?
I did not. What I did was I would sit down and I've written songs with this guy, but there was a Radney Foster record called Del Rio, Texas, 1959.
Love Rad. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was a
great record.
And there were songs on there, and I just remember sitting there. There was a song called Closing Time. I don't remember but it was like, every afternoon at 5 o'clock, I forget all about you. Ain't nothing like this honky-tonk to remind me we're through. And, you know, so I start listening to that, and then my older brother, who passed away, was a big Dan Fogelberg, James Taylor guy. So to answer your question, when I got a used guitar at a yard sale, I sat down and started putting, I don't know if I should tell this, but I will. I started putting my own lyrics, because I was a lyricist more than but I would put my lyrics to, there's a fan beating down the, just over somebody else's melody.
But
what that did was that.
That's cool.
Well, it kind of, I just sat there by myself for months and months and months and months and kept thinking, you know, what are my favorite songs? Mm-hmm. And then I would put my lyrics to their songs. I never turned them in. I never tried to get them cut.
But by doing that, you're learning the structure of the song, you know?
I learned that, you know, okay, there are certain places, certain things go.
Yeah.
Where the chorus needs to rise up, or where the, you know, or it doesn't. And nowadays, I think all those rules are out the window.
Mm-hmm.
What you eventually, in my mind, get to is, it's second nature.
Yeah.
Like, I definitely feel like now I could sit down and write a really good song. As every song you write great? Of course not. That's silly.
Mm-hmm.
But the more you do it, the better you get at it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
So I still do it.
You dug in. You kept showing up. You're like bringing the lunch pan in every day, writing twice a day.
Yeah.
You know, once you got that bug and you knew what you wanted to do, that same perseverance kicked in, didn't it?
Yeah, 100%. And I was super lucky, again, that once I had my list, I got to write with the bigger, better writers.
Yeah.
And I was like a sponge, man. I'd go in there and sit with those guys, and I would listen and I would watch. Now, I will say this. I never went in with less than an idea. And in some cases, I'd go in with I still do this.
Yeah.
With a verse and a chorus, or a verse, because I like to write by myself. But yeah, man, I just, the perseverance, the persistence. Now, I will say there's a difference between being a pain in the butt and being persistent.
That's true.
Because I have some friends, I'm like, dude, you can't keep calling so-and-so, because Nashville, unfortunately, this is the way it is. It's a closed community to the outsiders until you become one of the insiders.
Yeah.
And that's what I experienced. After my list, I went from being on this side of the fence to all of a sudden being on this side of the fence.
People want to write with you now.
Yeah, and, yeah. Exactly. So, yeah. But yeah, to your point, yeah, man, I definitely, just like the book talks about, I try to say to my... Just yesterday, I was singing to myself the old Gloria Gaynor song, I Will Survive.
I Will Survive.
Like, I don't know, man. I'm going to make it through unless, you know.
And you're doing it.
Yeah.
You know, your recent success, you know, cuts with Chris and George Strait and Chris and Kenny Chesney, all due to that same perseverance, huh?
Yeah, for sure. Like you and I were talking about before we started, you know, I am fortunate that I have had hits that were big hits. So those songs still pay, and I've got other songs recorded either way that I wrote with Stapleton and Kendall Marvel. I just got a thing from BMG yesterday. They're putting it in a movie, and it's a big movie.
Wow.
And that pays nicely. But, yeah, man, I just am the guy that says, you know, I'm going to stick with this. And about 3 years ago, Tim Medlin, who owns a company called Porchlight Music, signed me. And Tim has said, I'll stand by you and I believe in you. Well, as a result of that, Tim is the publisher on the One More Sunset, which is on the Kenny Chesney record. And then the one we got, Kenny cut a new record or is working on a new record, I've been told. And I got one on that. So,
that's awesome. And you know, the thing, looking at Kenny Chesney's career from the beginning, he and his people, they always get the best songs for him somehow. I mean, so you got to feel really proud about that.
Yeah. Again, I'm super lucky. We, Porchlight, hired a new song plugger. Jenny Hall, I don't mind giving her a shout out. And she's a hard worker. Mm-hmm. And she got those, but she got both of them cut.
That's awesome. So that's very good.
I'm back.
Maybe you can play one of these new songs for us.
I don't know if I can or not.
Come on. I know you're playing a little bit when we were doing the sound check. You were doing a little bit of the Honky Tonk Hall of Fame.
Well, the Chesney songs are, one's called One More Sunset.
Cool song.
But I've never played it.
Really? I can understand.
Both hands of time keep ticking, even if I don't want to admit it. Can't catch that one more minute once it's gone. I'm like a midnight gambler, making the most of the moments that matter. That good vibe standard time's the one I'm living on. I got one more, never forget at night. One more, look at the morning light. Long as there's a breath in me, I know there'll always be. One more dream to dream on, sweet summertime drink to drink on. Another one love song to sing, and one more sunset to see. The spinning ball keeps spinning around. That man in the sky keeps setting them down. I ain't done yet, I got one more sunset. Packed light, nothing heavy. Top down, always ready. Just like old Willie said, to thine own self be true. I had a late night, too drunk realization. When that love train leaves the station, it ain't slowing down and it ain't waiting around on you. I got one more, never forget a night. One more, look at the morning light. Long as there's a breath in me, I know there'll always be. One more dream to dream on, sweet summertime drink to drink on. Another one love song to sing, one more sunset to see. The spinning ball keeps spinning around. That man in the sky keeps setting them down. I ain't done yet, I got one more sunset.
You know, it's so Chesney. It really is.
Yeah.
Now, when you and Danny Myrick and Brett James sat down to write that song, did you write it specifically for, were you thinking this is a Kenny Chesney cut?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I was driving, again, like this is the part I would encourage other people, you know, like just keep doing. And I'll tell you a story about the reason I think that people like you or me, like, this is why you almost have to do it. So after my list, it was like 3 years before I had another single. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, even though I'd made, you know, good money, I was like, all right, man, maybe I'm the Milli Vanilli of country music. Oh, you know, maybe I had one hit and I was a one hit wonder and whatever. And I was in the grocery store.
You weren't lip syncing or anything though. Actually.
No. I was in the grocery store and I was thinking to myself, man, I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. Like, it's just, you know, it's, I don't know if it's going to work out. And all of a sudden I heard this song in the grocery coming over the speakers. And I had an old, I used to keep a cassette player. This is before, you know, iPhones. Yeah. I hate to date myself, but I had an old cassette player and I heard this song. It was like a pop song from the 80s or something. And I'm like getting some, you know, groceries. And I get out to the car and that song is still going through my head. And I was like, man, that'd make a good country. And I picked up my cassette player and sang into it. And then it hit me like, 15 minutes before that, I'd said, screw this, man, I'm done. So this is what you do.
Yeah.
Like, so you just kind of have to go with it. You know, I don't, even if you don't make significant money at it, it is necessary for you to do this. Mm-hmm. Like it is, it, for me, it's, I call it soul fulfillment. Yeah. Now it's great when you get a song recorded by a major artist. Yeah, it's fantastic. That, to your question, and the only reason I told you that is to preface this, I was driving down the road about 3 years ago, and I sang that to myself. Both hands of time keep ticking, even if I don't want to admit it. Can't catch that one more minute once it's gone. Mm. And then I just was like, I don't know where that's going, but I like that. And I recorded it. And I thought, I got this idea called One More Sunset. So I called my friend Danny Myrick, who wrote, she's country and International Harvester. And I love this life. He's a great guy, great guitar player, great songwriter. And I told him, I was like, man, check this out. And he was like, man, I love that. So then we got together and kind of worked on it. Then I reached out to Brett, who is an old friend of mine. I was like, hey, dude, we got something we think is killer. And Brett just went, yeah, man. I mean, obviously, that's a no-brainer.
Oh, man.
And Brett's crazy talented. So we all finished it together. And then, Kenny cut it. And I don't know what they're doing. The first single is out. It's called Take Her Home. They're saying this one, that one's got a shot.
I hope it is for you.
Well, thank you. We'll see.
Yeah. Keep our fingers crossed. Yeah. It's a great song. Thanks. And it's so Kenny Chesney.
Yeah.
It really is.
100%.
So why don't we do one more? Take us out. And again, I want to thank you for being on the show. I don't know. Can you do the new George? To have a George Strait cut. I mean, come on. That's awesome. And this is your second one, right?
Well, you know, I had his 60th number one song.
60th. Okay.
Give It All We Got Tonight.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I could try. But yeah, that was, you know, that was one of those things too, man. I got
to. You know, anything you like, you know.
I got to go to the Skirmerhorn and play with my buddy Phil O'Donnell, who I wrote the song with.
That's a guy they call Philbilly, right?
Philbilly.
Yeah.
And George was there, and it was like, man, how cool is this? Again, you know, you're talking about 20 years prior, I was selling Robitussin, and I'm on stage at the Skirmerhorn, and there's 2,000 people, George, Dean Dillon, Tony Brown, all in the front row, and it's nerve-wracking.
But I'll bet.
I remember saying to myself, I'm going to take this in, and I'm going to enjoy it. But yeah, I'll play part of that.
All right, that's good. That's good.
Because I don't know about the other one. I could try it.
Georgia has this single with Chris Stapleton, your old buddy.
July moonlight shines, your pretty little head on my shoulders. Pulled over on the side of the road. Oh my God, you're something like nothing I've ever seen. Time to sleep, let me dream. Baby, fall into my kiss. It should just happen like this. Trusted so much that there's no one else but us. Moment says it's alright, cause that's all we have in this life. Baby, drink up this love and give it all we got tonight. Summer honeysuckle leaking through roll down window. We both know that seed lays back. Anything can happen. So imagine it'll never end. Close your eyes and you can see we are where we're meant to be. And baby, fall into my kiss. It should just happen like this. Trusted so much that there's no one else but us. This moment says it's alright, cause that's all we have in this life. Baby, drink on this and give it all we got tonight. Give it all we got tonight.
You know, and George Strait has had 60 number ones, and that was the 60th.
That's it.
So how magic is that? Wow.
Again, man, that's, you know, just blessings and luck. Like, I mean, it was right place, right time. We wrote it. And
you worked pretty hard to get that lucky, though.
Well,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, man. You know, Dad would say luck is when preparation and opportunity coincide.
Exactly. Right. So. And I can't let you out of here without talking about your buddy, Chris Stapleton. How did you guys meet? And you guys worked together for a long time, right?
Yeah. Well, we don't much anymore.
Not much. Well, yeah, he's pretty darn busy.
He's a little tough to get a hold of. Man, when a girl named Liz O'Sullivan was a song plugger at Seagale, and she, for lack of a better word, I guess she discovered Stapleton.
Wow.
And I was friends with her, and she called me and said, I got this guy, I want you to write with him. And he had shaved head and...
He had shaved head back then.
Yeah, no...
Hard
I mean,
to imagine.
Shaved his head. And he's a great guy. He's super funny, but it definitely, you know, takes a little getting to know. Uh-huh. But he's a great guy. I mean, we were good buddies for years. And so, man, again, I bet we wrote 50 songs.
Really?
And we got, you know, we've had 7 or 8 of them cut. But, yeah, man, he's as talented as they come. Even in those days... I would say to myself, that dude is the best singer in Nashville.
He's
and
amazing.
I was with him when he came in and said, well, I just came from a meeting. I got offered a record deal. And I was like, oh, man, I mean, dude, congrats. And he was like, I don't think I'm going to take it. And I was like, come on, man. And so he eventually did. But Chris is a true artist. You know, he wants
to
do what he wants to do.
Yeah.
And if people like it, they like it. If they don't, they don't. And they obviously do.
They love it. Yeah. What a great, great singer. Even, you know, you watch him do the national anthem, you know, his version of the national anthem that he did was one of the NFL games, wasn't it?
Super Bowl.
Super Bowl. Was Super Bowl. It's amazing. I'm like, whoa.
Crazy. Yeah.
Dude.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, he is. So, hey, Tim, thank you for being on our show.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
Yeah, really good to get to know you.
I hope people buy my book. It's called Going Crazy, Left Foot, Right Foot Breathe. It's on Amazon.
Yes. I got my version on Kindle, and I love it. I can't put it down. It's a great book, and I recommend it to you. Please check it out. Tim, all the best. Continued success and love what you're doing. You're quite an inspiration, and you got me fired up to write today.
I appreciate that, Dave. Thank you for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this intimate glimpse into the world of songwriting and found inspiration in the stories shared by our talented guests. Remember, the magic of music lies not only in the notes and chords, but in the emotions and experiences woven into every lyric. Until next time, keep listening, keep creating, and keep the melodies alive.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Marriott Bonvoy is the official hotel partner of U.S. Soccer. Join Marriott Bonvoy today to get closer to the game with exclusive perks, unforgettable experiences, and benefits that go beyond the pitch. Spring Hill Suites, part of Marriott Bonvoy, offers complimentary hot breakfast and spacious all-suite accommodations, perfect for the whole team, with room for up to 6 guests. Make your next getaway a win. Learn more at springhillsuites.marriott.com.